darkness. Then an expanding flash of light in the sky that blasts a ring of dust rippling out across a desert landscape.
To enable me to cope with the stresses and the nightmares from the atom bombs I've witnessed.
Dust violently blasts across land.
I have devised ways and means of keeping myself busy. One of those interests was astronomy. My objective was to map the moon. I could see each crater, each piece of desert area. This dividing line between light and dark, where there was nature's power being demonstrated and its violence.
Trees obliterated in an explosion.
It puts everything in perspective. It's given me more of an understanding of the nature of man to destroy life.
The moon slowly drifting.
And that thought has weighed heavily on my conscience. Personally, I feel that I'm a part of something that should never have happened.
The speaker, a white man with grey hair wearing a white shirt with an open collar, stares ahead.
This is the longest running scandal in British history.
A ticking clock.
There is nothing bigger or worse than what's happened to the nuclear veterans.
In the heart of the atom's destructive power, there lay the antidote to the threat of war, the great deterrent.
75 seconds.
The world doesn't know. I've been fighting this battle for 63 years.
The British state have gaslighted these men.
The development of nuclear weapons marched ahead.
60 seconds.
It was really frightening. We thought we were going to die.
Britain would test the megaton or H-bomb.
They're carrying inside them invisible bullets.
Toxic ionizing radiation.
Severe internal problems, dead at 6 months old from cancer.
Cancer, 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 cancer. You can go on.
We were lab rats.
Minus 20 seconds.
There exists within our society some dark forces that suppress the truth.
They killed people and they haven't acknowledged it.
The question is simple. What killed the babies?
Minus 10 seconds.
We're constantly living in this shadow, in the shadow of the bomb.
5, 4, 3, 2, 1.
An immense blast in the sky.
You could see the evil in it. It was like looking at the devil.
Britain's nuclear bomb scandal. Our story. Between 1952 and 1963, Britain embarks on a series of nuclear tests in Australia and the South Pacific. The operation involves around 39,000 British and Commonwealth servicemen and scientists. Collectively, the men experience 45 atomic and hydrogen bombs and hundreds of radioactive experiments.
I was born in these parts, and the biggest excitement was a week in Blackpool. And all of a sudden, you're going to bleeding Australia. Bloody hell.
I'd been on a ferry over the Mersey, and then I'm suddenly on a troop ship to a small coral island in the middle of the Pacific.
I was 18, and we were told we were going out to Christmas Island. And I said, Christmas Island? Oh, where's that? I haven't got a clue.
Going to Australia, it all seemed rather romantic. Things which you only see on films.
It was a paradise island. Wow, what more can you want at our age?
We were all young men, under 25, not married. You played football, lots of beer,
but it was infested as well. We were eaten alive with mosquitoes right from the start.
There were hundreds of crabs. Hundreds.
Now, these things are huge.
Dragonflies come out the bush, you know, caught right in front of you, you know. Frighten the life out of you.
We were having a good time until the bombs started.
And thought we'd be safe.
The man in the white shirt thinks for a moment, then takes a breath.
Excuse me, mate.
Archive footage of a Royal Air Force plane flying over water.
We had no idea what we were letting ourselves in for.
We were taken to a beach. They told us by Tanai to sit with our backs to the sea.
Draw your knees up, put your hands over your eyes. That is the sum total of my instructions.
Minus 40 seconds, close eyes, close eyes.
There was about 2,000 of us.
People worked out the navigation. We were 9 miles away from two air bombs.
All we had, a pair of shorts and a T-shirt.
There was fear.
I was frightened. They were all kids. A couple of friends of mine who were wetting themselves.
25.
Some of them were praying. And some of them wanted the mothers.
5, 4, 3, 2, 1, flash.
A bright light flashes.
Boom. The crescendo.
An aerial view of a gigantic mushroom-shaped explosion with a shockwave emanating from the centre.
The flash was so bright I could see through my hands.
You saw all the bones, tendons, everything through your hands.
You feel it go through your body. You're like a light bulb.
There was this humongous ball of fire boiling up into the sky. Hurtling toward you was this thick line. This blast hits you.
Buildings shattered into pieces.
It blew grown men off the feet.
You got burned. But you didn't blister. It was that hot.
I felt that my body was boiling.
It was as if I was being microwaved. This tremor inside. You felt you were just going to explode.
People picked themselves up and started to run away. Where we were running to, God only knows. Come to escape.
We thought we were going to die.
A shockwave spreading across a clear sky.
Then after all of that, my next order was back to work. Nobody told us anything. We were just left to get on with life.
Smoke rising from the remains of trees, then the date 1963 winding back to 1945. Trinity Nuclear Test, New Mexico, USA.
Film showing the bursting of the first atom bomb, the experimental one, in New Mexico.
During the war, the British had played a huge part in the Manhattan Project in the United States, which created two different kinds of atomic weapon. One was dropped on Hiroshima, the other on Nagasaki.
The two targets 100,000 people dead in an instant. And that figure, by the end of 1945, will have doubled as a consequence of radiation poisoning.
At the end of the war, the Americans made it illegal to cooperate on nuclear weapons development with any other nation. For Britain, it was clear that they were going to have to develop the weapon on their own.
It was, of course, inevitable. Now Russia has proceeded.
The developing Cold War, Soviet Union glowering across the Iron Curtain, there was a sense in which this was a weapon that was needed to be at the top table with the Americans.
The testing of weapons on the UK homeland was politically untenable because it would have exposed the population to risk. They would need to find another part of the world for it to be politically safe.
Black and white footage of a docked British Navy aircraft carrier. 1952. Looking to its former empire, Britain finds a suitable location in Australia. The voice of Sir William Penny, physicist.
The Admiralty made a search through their charts, and it seemed as if the Montebello Islands would offer everything that we wanted.
Operation Hurricane, Montebello Island.
Britain saw itself as the master, and Australia was very much the servant.
Can we have the all-ready signals, please?
There were very few questions asked.
5, 4, 3, 2, 1, now.
An explosion over the sea.
This was Britain's first atomic explosion.
A crowd of people watched the blast.
The UK graduated as an atomic bomb power. But within the space of a month, the United States had tested its first hydrogen bomb.
A colossal explosion in a cloudy sky.
Winston Churchill said the gap between a hydrogen bomb and an atomic bomb was about the same gap as between the atomic bomb and a bow and arrow.
Giant shock waves spreading with a hazy golden glow.
By 1953, the Soviet Union would have tested its own hydrogen bomb. And Britain finds itself having to start almost from scratch again. The hydrogen bomb is now as necessary as the atomic bomb had been before it.
Sunlight shining over a dry, scrubland landscape. Emu Field, South Australia. 1953. Britain finds a location in South Australia to develop its hydrogen bomb building program. Troops are stationed in two testing zones, Emu Field and Maralinga.
The British considered Emu Field and later Maralinga to be empty land, uninhabited. But they were aware that these were homelands of Aboriginal people.
A woman with curly greying hair carrying a pot of paint.
Aboriginal people crisscross through these lands from generations to generations. My grandparents and their parents walked through country, maintaining language, maintaining culture, maintaining their spiritual connection to this country, and they've been doing that for thousands of years. There was no consent from traditional owners, no consultation at all. People were living there. Many of them were loaded on trucks and moved to various locations away from those sites. There was lots of grief and trauma because of the British testing program.
Operation Totem, Emu Field, Australia.
Operation Totem consisted of two nuclear weapons tests. They were highly experimental.
Sir William Penny flew to the site. On his shoulders lay the responsibility of deciding the exact firing date, taking into account the prevailing weather conditions.
The British mission was headed by William Penny, a physicist who came to be the father of the British bomb, the British Oppenheimer. Meteorologists warned William Penny about the wind directions which were likely to interfere with safe testing of Totem One. But those warnings were ignored by William Penny because he was in a hurry to get this weapon tested.
William Penny and the scientists were under extreme political and military pressure, and if you're under pressure of that kind, corners must end up being cut.
They were more concerned about speed than safety.
A clock mechanism.
5, 4, 3, 2, 1, 0.
A person in a cowboy hat watches a blast.
The bomb was detonated, and as a direct result, a meteorological phenomenon occurred. A cloud detached itself from the main atomic cloud, and it moved approximately 170 kilometres or so, rolling across the countryside.
Dad was a young boy at the time. They were playing in the sand dunes on that day. That morning, they heard the first sound.
Karina's father, Yami Lester.
The ground shook. You can feel it. I remember this black mist coming over and quietly rolling through the mulga trees. Black and shiny, oily looking. And it went over our camp.
There was panic in the camp then, in the sand dunes. You know, Nanama were digging holes to protect the children. That afternoon, people were showing signs of sickness. Our older generation were starting to pass. And my grandparents were digging grave sites. Soon after, Dad's eyesight was impacted.
I become blind on one eye. I feel sorry for myself. I cried for my eye.
4 years after, Dad was completely blind.
That was it. I opened my eyes. Black.
And that's when his world turned into darkness. The country's scarred. The people are scarred. Generations are still feeling the trauma today. And it's so hard to explain to Western culture and Western people about this.
People watching an explosion.
Because white men don't see it. They don't hear. They don't smell country. They don't feel it. You can never bring it back. And that's unjust. That really is unjust.
A 1980 report suggested that up to 50 Aboriginal people died as a direct result of the black mist. Without official records, that number cannot be substantiated. 1956. Sea lapping at a shore. Operation Mosaic, Montebello Island.
The British were now set on a course towards a hydrogen weapon. The Mosaic series were urgent tests to refine the design of a hydrogen weapon. They were also looking to see the effects of explosions on equipment and, sadly, on personnel as well.
I was allocated to a ship called HMS Diana, which happened to be the ship that was chosen to attend the nuclear tests at Montebello. The object of the exercise was to see how servicemen would react to a nuclear war where they'd have to cope with fallout.
mighty explosion and a mushroom cloud rising into the air.
Do you know Portia's speech from The Merchant of Venice? The quality of mercy is not strained. Droppeth as the gentle rain from heaven. And they would have us believe that this nuclear fallout was just the gentle rain from heaven. It wasn't. It was toxic and it was deadly. It was ionising radiation.
HMS Diana was the designated guinea pig ship for Operation Mosaic. The ship was sent into the fallout cloud for both the Mosaic bombs as a deliberate strategy to understand what would happen when a ship went through an atomic cloud.
HMS Diana, cruising across water.
The mission of the ship was to sail into the toxic fallout of the nuclear blast, to follow directly as it moves.
There is no doubt that the British government intentionally put men in harm's way.
I was used. Everybody on that ship were used. You weren't given a choice in this, and if that's not being used, tell me what is. If the MOD are honest, they would say that.
Trees blowing in the breeze outside a house.
Susie Boniface, a very nice lady. And I think I'm a name in her little black book. I would be in love with Susie, but not at my time of life. I'd soon have a boiled egg lightly done.
Susie Boniface, investigative journalist.
This is the longest running scandal in British history. There is nothing bigger or worse than what's happened to the nuclear veterans. I've been working on it probably about 20 years.
The whole thing was one big experiment. In 1955, the Prime Minister, Anthony Eden, was briefed by the scientists that it could damage troops' DNA. And his response was, it's a pity, but we can't help it. Of the 300 or so men who were on HMS Diana, about half of those who were found to have died since died from tumours of some sort, and they generally have increased rates of prostate, bladder, kidney and blood cancers. It was just, we're going to sail a warship through fallout on two occasions for 8 hours each time. The effect on hardware was considered of far more importance than the effect on the men who were expendable.
Maralinga, South Australia.
The British are going very hard and fast on hydrogen bomb development by 1956. They are seeking to narrow the gap between themselves and the Russians and the Americans in this weaponry. And part and parcel of the British quest is to understand more about this phenomenon called fallout.
Operation Buffalo, Maralinga.
Operation Buffalo consisted of four atomic weapons tests. Britain needed the scientific data that was coming out of the Maralinga tests to go to the main game, the hydrogen bomb.
I was to be a part of a radiation monitoring team.
John Folkes.
This was the first time in Maralinga that an aircraft would be required to fly actually into the mushroom cloud. The objective was to take a sample. We tore down the runway. This was my first experience in flying in a jet. We then reached our predetermined point. We circled. We got to the point where the explosion took place and we turned towards it.
Military personnel turning towards an explosion.
one's natural instinct is to go in the opposite direction, not towards it. That's where anxiety comes in. It was at that point where I looked down and saw this inferno. Crimson, black smoke, billowing up towards us. I didn't think we were going to make it. The cloud was rising. It was coming up at an alarming rate. This fear. I felt so vulnerable. How we got so close and weren't vaporised, I just don't know. The gauges started to fluctuate. This enormous shockwave flipped the aircraft over. I was literally hanging by these straps. We were more or less upside down, but climbing. Fortunately, away from the bomb. The thought did occur to me, was it the hand of God? The shockwave undoubtedly saved our lives. Whether it was the intensity of that noise that shook all the electromagnetic pulse, my hands have shaken ever since.
John holds out his shaking hands. Between 1953 and 1963, 205 men are ordered to fly through mushroom clouds.
My other role was ground sampling of craters. Our mission then was to walk directly towards the crater, where we were to take samples from the rim. The sheer heat of the explosion converted the sand into glass. It was like thin ice.
A significant number of the men were deliberately and knowingly exposed. In Operation Buffalo, they ordered hundreds of men to walk, march, and crawl on their elbows through fallout in order to see how much of it stuck on their uniforms.
It didn't take me long to realise that we were being put at risk. Safety was of secondary consideration. The primary objective was to get that weapon at any cost.
1957. Archive footage of the Houses of Parliament.
Britain was moving very fast towards testing its hydrogen weapon, and it began Operation Grapple.
Operation Grapple, Christmas Island.
The Australian government had demanded that the British not test a hydrogen weapon on Australian territory, and so they finally settled on Christmas Island in the Pacific.
The British hydrogen bomb project was something of a rush job. The international community, led by the two H-bomb powers at the time, America and Russia, decide to put an end to atmospheric testing, which would be disastrous if it happened before the UK had tested its first thermonuclear weapon. They need to get this weapon tested before that ban comes in.
A plane taking off.
The neglect of safety at Christmas Island was appalling. The many personnel, but also the people of Christmas Island, were subjected to extraordinary risk.
There was a small but vibrant local community on that island. Those at the top were not too worried about the human cost. This was a very menacing Cold War environment, which they would have felt, I think, at the time, trumped
some collateral damage, even some collateral human damage.
Shirtless soldiers marching in a line.
To take us to a beach where we knew that we were closer to the bomb. We didn't know why.
But they did tell the lads they'd get a better view of it.
An atomic bomb dropped 20 miles away from us.
John Morris. A bright flash, then a ball of light sending out shock waves.
For the men involved in these tests, there is no safe distance from an atomic explosion.
I never had special defensive clothing issued.
The initial blast of gamma radiation and ultraviolet radiation, plus the heat that was generated, were probably the most significant causes of radiation exposure.
There was everything flying past. There's coconuts and bits of trees.
High energy electromagnetic energy sources that can penetrate almost anything.
Protection zero.
Electrons or beta radiation.
There wasn't one on that beach had a monitor.
Neutrons from the nucleus of the atom, again, can penetrate almost anything.
We had no idea what we'd been exposed to.
Protons can be fired off like cannonballs that have the potential to do the most damage. The initial blast, though, is really just one aspect of the destructive power. Further away from the zone, the source of radiation of most importance would have come from the fallout, the byproducts of the initial explosions, all of which have potentially significant biological consequences.
The mushroom cloud, we saw it sucking up all the sea, all the sand up in the air. It rained for 3 days after the bomb. So all that debris, all that sand, all that rubbish was on the island. But the MOD said no, it was too far away. What a bollocks.
A question that comes up is, how much did we know when these tests were being conducted? And the answer is, we knew enough. We knew enough to know that this was dangerous. The soldiers, the scientists, this population, this community involved in these tests were living in an area that was significantly contaminated.
We had to breathe irradiated air, drink irradiated water, eat irradiated fish.
Individuals consuming these local products will be exposed to that radioactivity.
Operation Grapple made Britain the third nation in the world to possess the hydrogen weapon. The largest of the Grapple bombs was about 200 times the size of the bomb dropped on Hiroshima. Radiation safety standards were very much secondary to the timetable to build the British bomb.
We were up against an enemy that we could neither see, smell, touch. We would take toxic particles home with us.
A black and white photo of John with his arm around a woman.
When I think of what happened afterwards and the lads dying, then I get upset. Yeah, can't help it. Sorry about that.
Flowers and plants moving in the wind. 2024.
This is a medical study by the British Nuclear Veterans Association in 1985, which actually shows the names, what they died from, their ages, and where they were. Christmas Island, Montebello, Christmas Island, Maralinga.
There's only 10% of them left. And many of them have had decades of chronic illness.
what they died from. Leukemia, cancer, heart disease, cancer, heart failure. Cancer. You can go on.
Something has happened to them to make them some of the sickest people in the country. Whatever could it be?
Age groups, 26-year-old, 25-year-old, 31-year-old, 43, 44. Every one of them have died young.
I was as fit as a butcher's dog. I've had cancer. I've also had pernicious anemia since I was 26.
In 2007, there was a genetic study from New Zealand which found that the veterans themselves had a rate of genetic damage similar to that of clean-up workers at Chernobyl.
I had cancer of the bowel. That wasn't terribly pleasant.
The effects are at the level of the genes, neurological function, heart function.
I've now had 7 heart operations. I'm still suffering from that now.
I've had 93 skin cancers removed.
Even very low doses of radiation can cause damage to the DNA.
I had 2 massive tumours come up on my right-hand side. I could rest my elbow on them.
We often don't discover the consequences until much after the fact, when the consequences have done great harm already.
I've been lumbered with lipomas, probably 150. There's a big one there. On my abdomen and everywhere, you know. I'm sure you don't want to go on a strip show, but the ionising radiation is with you for the rest of your days. You can't get rid of it.
The UK personnel were not the only ones to suffer. It's also local communities.
An aerial view of dry scrubland desert, Maralinga, South Australia. Between 1953 and 1963, Britain carries out 593 smaller tests, known as the Minor Trials.
The story of the British nuclear tests is one of government secrecy. The Minor Trials at Maralinga were among the most dangerous scientific experiments ever held in Australia, particularly Vixen A and Vixen B. Very little was shared even with the Australian government, and nothing was shared with the Australian public.
I was in the Australian Air Force.
Come on.
I worked on the Vixen B series of tests. My job there was to build the firing platforms. There was beryllium, natural uranium, and of course there was the 24 kilograms of plutonium. That was blown to pieces in the experiments. It was the most devastating thing that ever happened at Maralinga. It created one of the most contaminated places in the world.
An aerial view of the land in Maralinga.
The British government did not tell the Australian government that it was using plutonium-239 in the Vixen B experiments. Roughly 22 kilograms of plutonium-239 was left lying around the site. That is easily enough to kill everyone on the planet.
Footage of people in hazmat suits.
Australia just accepted at face value the assurances they were given. That was the case for most of the tests, including the atomic bomb tests.
The cloud itself is carried away by the wind. The cloud is now well on its way across the continent of Australia.
The British knew that there were people living in the vicinity. They knew that they were going to be at risk. They gave assurances all the same to the Australian government that there was no such risk.
Woomera, South Australia, 300 kilometres from Emu Field.
I was based at Woomera for a short while. Woomera was an Australian rocket range, but was largely run by the British.
Woomera was the operational base for a large chunk of British post-war weapons testing. It was a community that was peopled by military personnel, but also civilians and their families.
My wife worked in the hospital. It became noticeable that there were more and more babies and little children being buried at the Woomera Cemetery. The missus delivered some of them babies. I used to go down to the cemetery. There'd be another dozen little graves, sometimes with a name, sometimes nothing. All I could do was wonder how these children died.
Rows of children's graves.
I reported in 2003 that there were dozens of babies who died at Woomera in inexplicable circumstances. Families from the base went on picnics and actually watched the nuclear bombs going off 600k away. Then the cloud would come over the top of the town. We know that Woomera probably had one of the highest concentrations of fallout across the whole of Australia.
Colin James, investigative journalist, heads into the graveyard.
All these poor little kids.
4 months old, stillborn. 7 months old, stillborn.
You're looking at extraordinary number of infants, babies. I've counted 22 stillborns, another 34 who are either days old or months old, and another 12 toddlers. It's quite overwhelming. These people are completely forgotten victims of the British nuclear test program.
A teddy bear by a grave.
And you've got to ask yourself the question, why? What happened? Officialdom has always blamed these deaths on heat waves, but a lot of them occurred in what we have here is winter.
A faded plaque, then a blue toy car.
Where records involving their deaths remain sealed by the Australian National Archives, and you can't access the autopsy results. It's time that secrecy ended.
What's written in the medical records? You can't get them. The question is simple. What killed the babies? And I'll probably die never knowing.
Sunlight fading in the evening sky above the graveyard.
I don't go back to the cemetery. Too painful. None of them should have suffered that.
Flowers and broken branches on the ground. Cloudy skies over a street with red brick houses in Bolton, England.
Is it difficult to talk about?
Oh, without doubt. There are huge wounds. We had a son. We named him Stephen, and everything was going great. Until one morning, we woke up, and my wife screamed and said, "Stephen isn't breathing." I picked him out of his cot and started giving him the kiss of life. Panic, sheer panic. Eventually the ambulance came and they took him to the hospital. And I knew he was dead. I just knew. The police came. They arrested me and my wife under caution. 3 days later, the police said, we've no charges, it was a cop death. The death certificate said he died of pneumonia. If that little baby had got pneumonia when we put him to bed that night, we would have known he was perfectly healthy when we put him to bed.
John Morris is standing on a street, looking up at a house.
I was numb. The only time I really, really understood was that when the undertaker came with his coffin.
John becomes emotional.
A little white box.
John shakes his head. His chin trembles and he holds up a hand. A black and white photo of baby Stephen.
It was the hardest day of my life. I was suffering. My wife was in bits.
A photo of John and his wife smiling.
The coroner report showed that his lungs possibly had not formed correctly. The problem is, I cannot prove it. I blame the MOD and the experiments they did on us for Stephen's death.
The photo of Stephen in an album.
And I always will.
John's inpatient record.
We have now 3 and 4 generations being born with problems.
A white man with receding grey hair, a goatee and glasses is looking at a laptop.
There's absolutely no doubt that radiation causes genetic damage. That damage can then be transmitted to the next generation.
Steve Purse, a white man with greying hair who has short limbs, moves forward on a motorized wheelchair.
My father was David Purse, a flight lieutenant in the RAF, who served at Maralinga in the 1960s. The minor trials, it's documented that they were the most dangerous and the most polluting. Dad said that the sand was blowing off the contaminated area onto the uncontaminated area, onto your Land Rover, your bed, your clothes, your food, all covered in this fine layer of sand. And he said that was radioactive sand.
Tall grass moving in the breeze.
When I was born, it was obvious from the moment anyone saw me that there was an issue. But the doctors just took me away from Mum. And they left it to Dad to break the news to her that I was disabled. But then he just said a phrase like, I think it's my fault because of my time in Australia.
Steve gazes out to sea.
I've been told there's about 200 forms of short stature, but I don't fit any of them. I'm unique. I'd always said I would not have children because I didn't want to pass on any of the genetic damage that I had, but I met a wonderful woman and we got married in 2019. And then we decided, well, we can try it.
Hello. You've been on the beach.
We have a wonderful son.
Yes, he did, I saw you.
And he's brilliant. He didn't escape, though. He has a genetic condition, which means his teeth are crumbling. It's quite a rare condition, which again fits well with our community. All the conditions are unique, like mine, or rare. The hope is that that's all he'll get. The worry is that some of these problems come out in adolescence. That's the nature of what we deal with. It's like these invisible bullets that keep being fired. Sometimes they hit, sometimes they don't.
Steve and his family head off along a beach.
This is a Sunday Mirror statistical study of the health problems of nuclear veterans and their families. So this is about 2002. Just the list of what's wrong here is enough to sort of scream at you that there's a problem. Severe eczema, face and hands, bowel malformation, problems with testicles, eye problems. A daughter and two grandchildren with deformed feet, insides deformed, severe internal problems, dead at 15 months, giantism, deformed hips, hole in the heart, dead at 6 months old from cancer. Malformed vocal cords, heart and lung defects, two thumbs on one hand, deformed fingers and toes, webbed feet, just goes on. Deformed penis, no anus, numerous miscarriages. I mean, you name it, they've had it. And there's no explanation as to why. Ministry of Defence has just never, ever done the genetic studies. If it wasn't radiation, well, then what was it? They've never said.
Brian Unthank.
My wife had over a dozen miscarriages. One of my children had been born with two wombs, one hidden behind the other. My son, his right eye was buried into his nose, so all you could see was the whiteness. And his left eye was locked. Another son, he was born with two large holes in his heart.
There was a survey of veterans' families by the University of Liverpool, which found they reported three times the normal rate of miscarriages and 10 times the normal rate of birth defects in their children.
There is this feeling that the whole community was part of that experiment.
A photo of James Owen.
My dad was sent to Christmas Island. He witnessed 24 detonations in 78 days. My father didn't really talk about his time at the tests. He'd signed the Official Secret Act.
Come on, are you?
He started to suffer lots of health problems in terms of his heart. He always wondered, was there a connection? And he had a heart attack. 52 is no age to go. Unfortunately, my brother died 18 months later with exactly the same condition that my father had. So he was 31 years old when he had, again, a massive heart attack. My sister, she's had tumours removed in her face, and her eyesight is deteriorating now, and eventually she will go blind. And then in 2022, when I was 51, I suffered a cardiac arrest. I was gone for 8 minutes. Unfortunately, my son witnessed the whole thing. He's 15 years old. I worry about my son. I worry about kids that he may have. It's a theme that runs through all of us.
This whole thing affects families in so many ways. It's a disgrace that it's got to this point.
The MOD's own studies show that death and cancer rates in nuclear veterans are similar to the general population. But the MOD rejects other studies that show a link between veterans' ill health and the tests.
1, 2, 3, 4, rot and cross. And you go, bump.
I've learned to live with it. The fear
of what's going to happen down the line.
Brian in a dance class. A CD's put into a sound system.
I don't think a lot of us ever got over the shock.
The fear before it and even after it.
Christmas Island's been living hell for me. They started planning tests around 53. They saw us come and go and let us die from that poison radiation in the sky.
A giant swelling mushroom cloud.
I did have nightmares. I started wetting the bed. I was just screaming out in my sleep. Screaming out.
The atomic bomb is very dangerous. We must get ready for it.
I'm the worst example of a British nuclear test veteran. I've got all my own hair, my own teeth, and I don't take one tablet. The injuries I have, you can't see.
There is a bright flash, brighter than the sun. If you are not ready, it could hurt you in different ways.
I started having a series of nightmares of falling. I still get flashbacks. The vision branded in my mind. Those flames coming up towards me.
We must be ready to do the right thing if the atomic bomb explodes.
I keep pushing everything to the back of my mind. Wash it away.
Trauma, this sense of tension.
Duck and cover. Even a thin cloth helps protect. Even a newspaper can save you from a bad burn.
I didn't know what fear was. After that first bomb, I knew what fear was going to be.
Black and white footage of a test dummy.
I consider myself lucky compared to most. I've survived.
We've had veterans who have committed suicide because they can't cope.
Government studies show, compared to other veterans, every single decade, there's more suicides than there should be in this group. And I would argue that's because of the way that the British state have gaslighted these men.
We're constantly living in this shadow, in the shadow of the bomb.
We must all get ready now. Then you're on your own.
There exists within our society some dark forces that suppress the truth. And I firmly believe that now. We've been betrayed. Shamefully. Betrayed.
Alan Owen, walking his dog through a field.
The official line is there is no causal link between the participation at the nuclear tests for the veterans and their health issues.
If you speak to the MOD, they will tell you anyone who has an injury is able to claim a no-fault war pension. If you have a leg blown off in Afghanistan, you can prove it quite easily. But if you were irradiated, the MOD asks you to prove what your radiation dose was. These guys were never told what their doses were, and most of them didn't have a dose taken anyway. So the only real proof of what happened to them is their blood tests. The long-term position of the MOD has been that these blood tests simply didn't take place. But the veterans have told me they were tested throughout.
The MOD has told the European and Supreme Courts it had no information about blood tests of troops during the nuclear tests.
I have asked for my blood records 4 times. So the MOD have either destroyed them, lost them,
or will not release them because they could implicate them.
The Maralinga records went to England. I believe the British government seized them. What does it say about what level of radiation we were subjected to?
We have hundreds and hundreds of people who are telling us that their medical records are either incomplete or will not be released to them.
I'm crying out to be diagnosed. My son's got a condition. This sort of information would help. We still have hundreds of years of children being born with conditions, so we need to start the research ASAP.
Successive governments have fought every legal action, fought every war pension claim. But in 2023, after a really long FOI battle, I was passed a document. It was earth-shattering. It contained 150 documents, all about blood and urine testing of troops, of civilians, of Australian personnel, and of Indigenous people. I was astonished at the contents. Blood testing, blood data, medical examinations on natives, everything that the MOD had said for 30 years that it didn't have. Hundreds and thousands of men were subject to orders for blood testing and had had it done. And they failed to disclose that to multiple courts. It was proof the MOD had been lying all this time.
They had seen the problems of Hiroshima and Nagasaki. I am disgusted with our establishment because they knew.
What they had said all the time, that they were guinea pigs, that they were lab rats, was right. They were experimented on as human beings during the entire course of the nuclear weapons tests.
A number of official documents.
And it is continuing today because there are people in the atomic weapons establishment and higher up at the Ministry of Defence who know full well what these records show and who are using spurious and unlawful grounds of national security to prevent them being published.
Those medical records are my life. We were really, really lab rats.
They need to provide the blood tests that they have pretended they never took. And that would show definitively whether or not any radiation got inside those men.
Terry Quinlan, looking at photos.
They have not known the truth. These records would provide answers. It's that pressure of not knowing that never goes away. The Kafkaesque attitude of their own government saying that what they experience can't possibly be the truth. And it's just not acceptable. The only thing that fixes this is political willpower.
After the nuclear trials, the MOD began to clean up the test sites. Despite five cleanup attempts, Britain failed to fully decontaminate the land. A white ticking clock next to a small model plane.
We have a dozen of those little kindlings. We've got to place them all in there in the right sequence, and away you go. The nuclear weapons testing was a fairly long program. In the end, everything was contaminated. What they'd done was just picked up all the horrible-looking debris, dug great big trenches with bulldozers and pushed it in there and covered it over. But the rubbish wasn't the dangerous part.
The British government had told the Australian government that the land was not contaminated, but there were 3 million pieces of plutonium-239 on the site.
Australia were going to hand Maralinga back to the Aboriginal lands. I said, well, they can't hand it back, it's too contaminated. And that's why I blew the whistle.
A gate with a keep out sign.
I knew about the plutonium that was buried there, and my concern was what was going to happen to the plutonium that was buried and who would be responsible for it.
I took the risk of being locked up for breaking the Official Secrets Act.
Avon Hudson made it impossible for the Australian government to ignore what was going on. He drew political attention to it.
The Australian government granted a royal commission that I was fighting for.
Nuclear Tests Public Inquiry, 1984.
After 30 years of secrecy here, the commission is steadily lifting the lid off Britain's nuclear past.
The British were horrified that we were going to even have it.
There have been claims of cover-ups, secrecy and out-and-out lies, all dragged kicking and squealing into the open.
Jim McClelland, Royal Commission Judge.
I know a lot of clever men came out here and set a lot of clever devices off, but it just strikes me as a massive monument to human folly.
A small group of Aboriginal people gathered together.
Yami Lester also played a crucial role in the Royal Commission, bringing the harm caused by the British tests to light.
Dad really wanted to say, you hurt people and you killed people and you need to be held accountable for that.
A radioactivity detector being used on a bagged item.
The Royal Commission ultimately led to a clean-up. The British were dragged kicking and screaming to contribute to the cost. They paid less than half. Vast areas remain too contaminated to ever be inhabited. For all the shortcomings of the Australian government, there has at least been an attempt to recognise the harm that was caused. This has not been matched by similar undertakings by the British government.
Britain has not set up a compensation scheme for its nuclear veterans. Compensation has been paid by the US, Canada, France, China, Russia, Isle of Man, and Fiji.
We're supposed to be a nation that honours its heroes, and part of our national story is the wars we have won and lost. The first duty of a country to those who keep it safe is to keep them safe in return. These men performed a vital role in protecting our country in the same way as the men who landed at D-Day. They are totally forgotten, utterly betrayed by their country. Many other veterans would say it's the MOD playbook. We delay and deny until they die. We're nearly at that point now. There's not very many of them left. How many more generations does it have to be?
In March 2024, the veterans and their families launched a new legal action against the MOD. They're calling for a public inquiry, compensation, and the unlocking of medical records.
The legal action is about suing for access to these blood tests.
The average age of these guys now is 85, 86 years old. We are losing them very fast, at least a couple a week. This is really a last opportunity for the MOD to come clean.
If this goes to court, it will take 5 years and these men will all be dead. We have to get an answer now with the threat of legal action that the MOD cannot hope to win. That's the only way it will happen.
Right, Terry, Brian, let's have you in a line with Gina and Steve, please.
It just made it possible for people at the top to say, we don't have to tell the truth.
to me, is a stain on Britain's history. Well, let's remove the stain.
When we say, I want a sharp salute, crisp as you like, all right? No, not you two.
Let's turn over the page and have a new chapter where we admit to what we did.
There's nothing that's lasted longer than this. And it's a bit like you saw at Hillsborough, and we've had at Grenfell, and the infected blood scandal, and the post office. What is right has been tipped upside down. And if we can find a way to fix the nuclear test veterans scandal, a lot of other problems get fixed.
John Morris is sitting at a bench in a garden on a sunny day.
My granddaughter, Laura, is expecting a child. I hope she won't have to live through the pain that I lived through because of loss. The first great-grandson. You've got to be happy. You've got to be. All my fears, I'll overcome them all as I've done it all my life. I mean, I've been living with Stephen's death now for 60 years. That experience, even now, is very difficult.
That's because no responsibility has been taken for the last 60 years, and that's what this has done to our family.
This will live with me until, in my head, I can say, we're over the hill.
And we'll get there, won't we? We'll get there.
It'll be so wonderful to behold of my great-grandson. I say, come here, lad. Let's have a let's have a snuggle. People need to know the danger that this world is in with atomic bombs.
John Foulkes is unravelling a large map.
This is a complete map of the moon which I drew from my telescope. It took 5 years. I was once asked, did I believe in God? To which I quoted an old English astronomer. Don't let's talk about God. Let's talk about a cosmic intelligence. That's ticking away in the background, creating life.
The intricately drawn map.
Life is precious. Mankind should come together and cherish the earth that he lives on. I hang on to those words.
In addition to British and Commonwealth forces, the nuclear programme involved the UK Merchant Navy and civilian contractors. It also affected numerous indigenous communities. Britain continued to test nuclear weapons underground in the US until 1991. The MOD said, no information is withheld from veterans. The protection and health of those involved was a vital consideration, as shown by the safety measures and monitoring that took place. An MOD statement. Nuclear test veterans made a huge contribution to UK security. The government is looking hard at the issue. Following a report by the Australian Royal Commission, the UK government paid £20 million to support the rehabilitation of former nuclear test sites.
What the government did to us wasn't very nice. Men from our armed forces paid the price. Soon will come the day when the government will pay recognition and a medal to our brave men. The nuclear tests have been living hell for them.